1 week.
As you see, I'm in a wheelchair. I was hit by a train 10 years ago, and a year ago, I was hit by a truck.
There's a feeling in the pit of your stomach the first several nights that you're out there when you realize you actually are in a place where you got nowhere to go.
How do you like being at the shelter?
Kind of good. And I like it when we had our own bed, different. And when we get our new house, I'll be so happy when I have my own room.
This may surprise a lot of people, but in the last school year, all of our schools here in Butte County, there's 14 different school districts, identified about 900 students, children and youth who were in homeless situations during the course of the school year.
Welcome to the Without a Roof program, where we expose and remedy poverty, the worst form of violence. Welcome to the episode one, Without a Roof weekly radio program. If you're tuning in for Sea Change, Without a Roof, we've been on radio here a year and a half or so, doing first Thursdays. We've moved to Wednesday, 5 to 5:30, and we're just happy to be here. I have a jam-packed show. It's so jam-packed, I'm sitting here with a stopwatch on that I didn't actually hit start. But we're going to be listening to, starting off with Lloyd Pendleton and ending with Richard Marbit, who came through on an invite from the Jesus Center and did some wonderful work in here. But he's going to be talking about housing. Today's program is all about housing first. A quick apologies for doing the edit here. I had to kind of move Chat and Catalyst. We had these neat little short little clips outside Lloyd Pendleton at Bidwell Prez. I just didn't have time to play. But no further ado, I'm actually going to start off this segment with a clip that Lloyd Pendleton had played before both of his public appearances here in Butte County at Chico down in Orville. And this is a Daily Show clip that I'm sure you'll enjoy here on People Powered Radio.
Welcome back. You know, I'll tell you one thing. Nobody likes homelessness. I'm very controversial. Least of all the homeless. But what can be done? Salt Lake City, Utah has a plan that will blow your mind. Hassan Minaj reports.
Across America, new and innovative ways to alleviate homelessness are being introduced, like banning the homeless because of body odor, fining them for sleeping outdoors, and arresting them for sitting down. But Salt Lake City, Utah has taken the next step by removing the homeless from their streets altogether.
Sir, have you seen any homeless people?
Nope.
Have you seen a single person living in a cardboard box?
No, sorry.
Where the hell did they put everybody? To find out, I sat down with the director of this initiative, Lloyd Pendleton.
We have reduced our chronic homeless count by 72% since 2005.
Did you hide them underground?
We did not hide the homeless people underground.
Did you convert them from Mormon to gay?
We did not convert them from Mormon to gay, or gay to Mormon.
So how did they do it?
We did it by giving homes to homeless people.
You did what?
We gave homes to the homeless. Yes, it's simple. You give them housing, and you end homelessness.
That's right. As part of a program called Housing First, Salt Lake City is just giving apartments to the homeless.
You gave a homeless person
a home.
Okay, so you gave a home to a homeless person, but that still makes them homeless.
No, they're housed. Because when you're homeless, you do not have a home. That's what the word means, homeless.
I'm going to be honest with you. I saw the movie Interstellar, and that makes more sense than what you're saying.
Well, you may think and I'll be adding up, but it adds up to us.
Sure. Giving homeless people homes sounds like a good idea, just like feeding people and providing health care sounds like a good idea. But everyone knows we just can't afford it.
22% of Americans are currently receiving some kind of government entitlement. That's 67 million people. And the truth is, we can't afford it.
What do all of these handouts cost the good, hardworking people of Utah?
These handouts cost probably $12,000, $10,000 to $12,000 per person housed.
There you go.
Compared with $20,000 a year on the street.
Wait, what?
What we give them is more effective and efficient than the emergency system, emergency room visits, EMT runs, and jail time.
But I feel like you're just giving them a home.
Yes.
Okay, so it makes financial sense. But the fact is, it's going to make them lazy.
They disincentivize you to get off welfare right, and actually go and work.
I'll get my rent paid. I'll get food. Why would I work?
Why would I work when the government pays me not to work? Why indeed?
What you guys are doing is incentivizing mooching.
We don't see them as moochers. We see them as people in great need have some support to fulfill their life.
It's almost as if Pendleton sees the poor and homeless as actual people. This was getting complicated, so I went to visit one of these moochers in their moochatorium.
This apartment has given me a job. With that job, I can move back to Chicago and be with my son, my daughter, and my family.
Do you see how this is a slippery slope? Doesn't it seem that you're totally dependent now on four walls and having a roof over your head?
Yes.
You're never going to want to sleep on concrete ever again.
Why would I want to sleep on concrete? I didn't want to do it when I was out there.
But if you just give people these apartments, the next thing you know, everyone's going to want to be poor.
No one wants to be poor. Everybody needs a hand sometime.
This was getting a bit confusing. If you're a poor person, you're supposed to look like this. But this guy has a job, an apartment, and general self-esteem.
The image we have of poor people as starving and living in squalor really is not accurate. Many of them have things.
99% of them have a refrigerator. 81% have a microwave. 78% have air conditioning.
What? So they're eating food that's been chilled? And then heated? They're not supposed to be like us.
Russell, they gave you a panini press?
Oh, I think I bought this.
Now I'm totally lost. We've given him a home. He's gotten his life back together. He's become a productive member of society. And it's costing us less.
So what's the catch?
What is the catch?
Yes, there has to be a catch. Is this like a homeless timeshare?
They don't have to have a timeshare fee every year. It's very simple. It works.
So if you see a homeless person, don't feel bad. Know that they can get a second shot at life. All they have to do is live in Utah.
All right, anyone had the honor and pleasure of actually seeing either of his public speaking engagements, you will know that that clip fit Lloyd Pendleton's presentation style to a T. No further ado, this next clip, I actually went to the Lloyd Pendleton, the Chico at the Bidwell Presbyterian and created an outline. I was fortunate to actually do an interview and shout out to one of my favorite organizations, North Valley Housing Trust. I went over there and interviewed Lloyd Pendleton yesterday just before he went on down to Orrville, which I also accompanied in a following car and did some work down there. So you're going to be hearing this first segment is literally Lloyd's interview at North Valley Housing Trust. And then I've got some beautiful input or comments from the mayor of Orrville. Shout out to Linda and the Butte County Sheriff, man, here on People Powered Radio. This is Guillermo Mash on behalf of the Without a Roof Radio Program, October 12, 2016. My pleasure to be here with the head of Utah's Homeless Task Force, which implemented a 10-year plan to end homelessness since 2006 with a housing first approach for people experiencing chronic homelessness, leading to dramatic decreases in chronic homelessness in Utah. So just welcome to Chico, Lloyd, and thank you for coming.
Well, thank you for the opportunity. I wouldn't be here without being invited by a lot of the homeless service providers and others, and it's been a great experience. I'm very impressed with Chico, because I've never been here before. You even have palm trees, which I was kind of surprised at. And you have some wonderful, caring people.
I do have to kind of say, Lloyd, to just tell you how impressed I was. I've been in a lot of lectures, a lot of presentations, and the only other two-hour presentation I've been in where I agreed with the person that was presenting more might be Paul Bowden from Western Regional Advocacy Project. And I'd reached out to him to mention your name. He works on legislation in four different states in the Northwest, human and civil rights. So I just really, really appreciated what you had to say. It really hit home for me.
Thank you very much, and I need to meet Paul. I don't know
you
about
do.
Him.
You do. I was actually, maybe I'll do this right now. I'm going to try to set up a joint interview with Paul.
That'd be great.
It's the first thing he said to me, because he's possibly the most recognized national spokesman for homelessness. But real quick, why is housing the homeless essential, Lloyd? Seems like a simple question, but...
Well, it is a simple question, and there's a simple answer. Housing ends homelessness. Because without a home or a house, but you want to make it a home, you have a difficult time dealing with your issues. You need to be able to have stabilization. You need to have safety where you can begin to take care of your own personal needs, your safety needs. And when you deal with those, then you can begin to look at the higher opportunities. And if you need treatment for mental health issues or substance abuse, housing really becomes the first major step been able to make that transition.
You know what I've been real impressed with, Lloyd, is not only your presentation, but you've got a whole bunch, I'm calling them breakout sessions with different folks in Butte County. Yes. Maybe if you've seen enough, I mean, could you talk to a little bit in a minute or so, 2 minutes, about strengths and weaknesses you've seen here in Butte County with the service providers and the infrastructure?
I'll be glad to. There's a lot of strength in that you're small enough, you know one another, you collaborate well together, and you work together, and there's a very caring spirit here. So I've been very impressed with that, and I've spoken across the country in many communities, and there isn't this kind of spirit in some of them. So, I mean, I'm genuinely impressed. So you have some very key ingredients and some very good champions. The thing that I see that can be improved is you come together on a countywide basis around a common vision statement with this committee above the silos that can begin to make the necessary systemic changes, policy-wise, funding priorities, to focus on housing the homeless individuals, rapid rehousing or permanent supportive housing. Veterans go down another way from the VASH vouchers, or the vouchers are unique to the veterans. So you have all these ingredients, but getting that coordinated effort is an area that can greatly be improved.
Now, I'm going to actually land on something that really spoke to me yesterday in regards to, you know, how a community views homelessness tends to drive, you know, how they respond to it. So since this was, you know, quote-unquote hosted by Greater Chico Homeless Task Force, the last time I spoke there, I literally had a conversation around through my 3x5s for emphasis, and I said, if we're going to allow the conversation to be around homeless people are criminals and homeless people shouldn't be in our community and they should be dehumanized, it's going to affect our abilities to provide solutions and housings, and it's going to actually lead to increasing ability for folks to find housing. I mean, what would you say to that?
Well, I would think so. And so for me personally, as I shared yesterday, I see them as my brother and my sister. God loves them as much as he loves me. And it's not my role to go out and condemn and judge. Now, some people who are criminals come in and merge in with the homeless. They may not be homeless, so they give the homeless a bad name. And I realize many of the homeless have to survive, and so going to the bathroom and eating, so they may steal in order to get some food. That's a criminal activity, I understand. But that's basic survival. And so to treat that as a hard crime, I think that's not fair. There's a better option from the standpoint of getting them into housing, but you need to find the criminals and deal with them in the appropriate way. And so you need to segment your homeless population, or what is viewed as a homeless population, into the appropriate interventions. So yes, viewing the homeless citizens as people that are part of your community, you care for them, will change how you view and what you do versus seeing them as all a pock on society. Yeah. That does not help them. So your basic assumption, your compassion, will have an impact on what you do as a community, as an individual.
Listeners just joining, we are indeed FM 90.1 KZFR Chico, listener-supported community radio for Sacramento Valley, foothills, and beyond. And opinions voiced on this program don't necessarily represent the views or opinions of KZFR, its staff, board of directors, underwriters, or volunteers. No further ado, we're getting back to a Lloyd Pendleton interview that was done post-Chico public appearance by Lloyd Pendleton, the czar of Utah's homeless task force, just before he drove down to Oroville to do a presentation down there on People Power Radio.
The other thing I'd mentioned in that short little time I had to speak is I was sitting in the Greater Chico Homeless Task Force, is I said, I think we're focusing too much on visible homelessness in this room to the detriment of families and children. And the lady next to me, and she was near tears, said, can I please take a few of your minutes? And I said, please go ahead, Lloyd. And she just looked with all the will and strength, and she said, I appreciate that so much, because I just housed a young family with two kids in a hotel room last night.
Sure.
And so let's speak a little bit about families.
Okay, so the homeless, a major study found that 80% of the homeless population are temporarily homeless, which are generally families, and they're not highly visible because they come into maybe a shelter system or live in their car and then work to get back into housing in some way. So yes, there's that huge 80% population, and they need just a little assistance, and then they're no longer homeless. 10% of them are long-term chronically homeless, the highly visible, the stereotypical alcoholic, mentally ill person. But they do consume a lot of resources and also a lot of emergency services. So there's an economic return on focusing on them because they are visible. So that's where we focus, and the HUD, the federal government's been focusing. But We don't ignore the families. We've done a lot of work with them as well, but it hasn't been publicized as much as our chronic homeless results. So, yes, there are different interventions, and, yes, we can't forget the family home, the homeless families, especially with children. So it's important we serve them as well.
And maybe just a point on humanizing, because I was speaking at Butte College, and I had this guy in the front row. I can still see his face, Lloyd. At the end of this little clip I showed, a street musician near tears saying, "I'm writing this for my mom." He got all red-faced, and he was like, "You're trying to humanize him." And yeah. I said, "Yeah, I am." So let's talk a little bit about humanizing people and how we're all human.
Well, they're a human being. We're all humans. And they're, as I said before, they're the children of God, for me, as I look at them from my standpoint. And so that becomes important because I can learn from that individual as well as he can learn from me. I do volunteer work in Africa, in Mali, Africa, which is the fifth poorest country in the world. I went over there initially to help them. Every time I came back out of my five trips, I came back enriched more because of what they gave to me than what I gave to them. It was a learning experience together. So we can learn from our homeless individuals, because some of them may be our own grandchildren, our own children. So they are part of our community. So treating them separately is not fair, in my view. A different intervention that they may need, sure, because you know you need appropriate interventions. But they're part of our community. They're not going to go away.
Community is everyone, Lloyd. That's
community is everyone. So yeah. When somebody in my community is hurting, I'm hurting. We're all connected. So it's my opportunity, because I've been blessed with good health and some fundamental resources, to go and bring help and encouragement and opportunities for them to make better choices.
So let's do a quick wrap-up for Butte County, since that's where you're at here right now, Lloyd, and talk about some things you see for next steps, or maybe something we haven't talked about you'd like to spend a minute or two on.
Well, just to reinforce, having the political leaders and the community leaders come together in that committee in the silo to create a common vision statement and a common drumbeat that permeates throughout the county and each of the cities that are within the county. So it's all of a coordinated effort, because a lot of the programs are countywide programs, the mental health, substance abuse. So they need a system that's out, and the medical system here is pretty much a countywide system. So just to reemphasize that, that's really a big piece, but you have the ingredients. I'm impressed. I like Chico. I won't move here because I like Utah also. And if I were to move somewhere, I would certainly consider this, but I've been very, seriously, I've been very impressed.
It's my favorite place I've ever lived, Lloyd. I want to end with a small gift, but something that's near and dear to me. If I can find
All right, thanks.
Blue bag.
For those on the radio, you won't see the gift.
I won't see
it. But
the
he's
gift.
Going to be getting one here.
I don't have
here.
The blue bag. I
but he lost bag. It.
You're still doing good at the time. You're still doing good. Well, here we go. I did a whole film festival. I actually do microblogging, Lloyd.
Oh, really?
All throughout Northern California. So this is Poor People's Film Festival. It's a vignettes, 43 vignettes that present homelessness throughout Northern California, many of it here in Butte County. But I put, Lloyd, thank you for contributing your compassion, experience, and skills to Chico's Housing First discussion. And I slipped this in. This is my good friend and colleague, Paul Bowden. Housing
okay.
House keys, not handcuffs.
Ah, I like that.
But I'd like you to have that. And it
Thank
has been my pleasure.
Much.
I can say that Kat told me before I met you, Lloyd, he said he is just a kind and sweet man. And that's what I've seen, and it's been a pleasure. I'm just so blessed that you came to this community. God bless you, Lloyd Pendleton.
Well, thank you very much. And I will listen to this as I drive back and forth from the house I'm remodeling.
It's a DVD. You got to throw that
Oh,
in.
I have to. Okay, you have I'll to put it in the TV. It. Oh, I have to watch it. Okay.
Well, maybe
thanks.
When we meet with Paul Bowden, you can give me a wrap-up on what you thought of the Poor
there
People's Film Festival
right.
from Butte County. Thank
All
you,
right.
Lloyd.
Thank you very much.
This is Guillermo Mash with Linda L. Dahlmeyer. It's just a pleasure to see you here. It's wonderful to see the mayor of Orrville here. What's your first impressions, Linda?
Well, I think it's a fabulous program, and for Lloyd is just funny as can be. So, and the Comedy Central, the first little video, I watched it all day yesterday. I also went to this presentation yesterday, and I think what that Comedy Central video just itself instantly breaks down the barriers of what you might perceive are how you felt when you came in thinking about, well, the homeless. And he also stresses in there, you know, get people on your team that think differently than you do. And so I really thought it was a great program.
Are you excited to champion the homeless committee? Because he's real keen on the fact that to be success, you need the political leaders. And
right.
having the mayor kind of chair that. What do you think about that?
Right. Well, I think it's something I'm willing to take on. It's a problem nationwide. A lot of people think it's only a problem in Butte County, but I know that's not a fact. And so being able to take care of what we need to take care of in our community or our city is something I'm looking forward to.
Community is everyone.
Community is everyone. And when I ran for mayor, that's what I said. It's about our community. It's
Linda.
Not just a city or a county. It's a community.
Love Butte County. Thank you, Linda.
Thank you.
That's why I'm encouraging that the mayor is going to be on the committee by the silo, start a pilot in the next 3 or 4 or 5 months of getting those people that the sheriff has to deal with on a regular basis. You go to the sheriff, and you can probably give me the names of 5 people right now that you arrest often that are homeless, correct? Or 10. And they know where they are. They see them often. Now, if he had the opportunity to say, I'm going to take these 6 people, I'm going to be able to put them into housing and then get a site pilot, you bring the hope to the police and the sheriff. They get discouraged also because you, community, expect them to solve the homeless issue. That is not their issue. They're hired to do criminal situations. Not and real criminal situations. Not urination and public exposure and trespassing. That's a waste of his time. Right?
Absolutely. When you have those people with chronic mental health issues and homeless coming to our jails, that's not the place for them. I need those jail beds for people who are a danger to the community, and we need to be helping those people, so I'm all for them.
Right.
Shout out to our community members in Orville. I really enjoyed that. It was really neat. It was like almost like a little family gathering down there last night. I'm going to transition here to a very powerful piece. Yeah, he told me I didn't need to call him a doctor the first time I interviewed him, but this is Dr. Richard Marbit, and he does an exceptional job in these 9 minutes interacting with me in conversational style radio, kind of describing the crisis that we faced nationwide and here in Butte County to provide affordable housing and supportive housing for our fellow neighbors here in Community is Everyone, Butte County on People Powered Radio. Let's move on a little bit to housing, Robert. Ed Meyerhead did a really nice piece with the CNR, Howard RD of the CNR, talking about how little housing we have available. What was your take on the housing situation here, Robert?
And the fundamental problem is what you got going on now is you have people who actually have vouchers. And the best I could tell, it sounded about 12 people in the greater Chico, I don't know if they were technically Chico residents or out, but I heard 12 different unique names of people who've had vouchers in the last month or so. I don't know if, you know, if they still had it or got there, but could not get housing, and they actually had a voucher in hand. And when you start to hear those stories anecdotally, you know, to me, I use anecdote to follow research. And when we went and met with the housing authority, when I went and started going through the numbers, the vacancy rate in Chico is 0.8%. Not 8%, 0.8, you know, 0.8%. And what you sort of know nationally is about 2% in the rental market is functional, functional capacity, about 2%, because you have to take time off to, you know, change carpet, change curtains, you know, to fix plumbing, sign paperwork, move in, move out days, and such like that. And so you're way above functional capacity. And so you can have all the voucher programs you want. You can have all the VASH vouchers and all that. If you don't create an inventory, you're not going to even come close to addressing it. The current programs aren't even working if you got a voucher and do that. And there's some technical reasons because of that. When you have a seller's market, they can add criteria to the vouchers. If you're in a place like I've been in the Midwest recently, and some of the places I've been to have like 18% vacancy, 20% vacancy. So if you're in a market that has a lot of vacancy, you can create that. You can use vouchers very successfully at a very cost affordable way, and it worked. But in markets that have that approach anywhere around 2%, 3%, you have to rethink it and say, all right, what are we going to do to create inventory? And you got to create inventory if you're going to try to solve the problem.
Man, I'm hearing the stories, you know, of why that's happened. And once again, listeners just joining, Robert Marbit from San Antonio, Texas, and expert on homelessness. But I'm actually know an awful lot of homeless people in here in Chico that have been just recently in SLA, was kicked out, SLE, a whole place, 10, 12 people, because it didn't meet code. They're shutting down mobile homes and mobile places that people stay. But the CNR article had a nice little wraparound on it that back in 2009 or 10, we had a 6% vacancy rate, which is healthy for a market. Now we're down, like you'd said, Robert, less than 1%. And I know physically three youth that I work with at this Youth for Justice program that I go to tomorrow in exactly the situation we're talking about. They have vouchers. They have, you know, things they're walking around with trying to find housing, and they can't. And for youth, it might be a good segue. Youth, Robert, I know you know as well as I do, it's a double sword. You got to find a place that'll rent to you without any history of rental, and you got to have someone signed for you.
When you have such a tight market, constricted market, whoever the seller is, the renter market, can add these extra things. And so you might pass the background check for the housing authority or the VASH voucher, you know, pick whatever program it is. But then you go to a person and they actually have some extra, either formal or informal, restrictions, which makes it even harder. And we got a phenomena going on nationally, and I know you want to take a national approach, is, you know, we got FEMA maps that have changed, that have knocked out a lot of the trailer parks, and that's not so much an effect in California, you know, that's more of an east, southeast phenomena. But then you also have the hurricane maps that have also knocked out more, again, a southeast phenomena. But you then have gentrification happening all across America, where infill, and I saw this in Chico, and this of the three national trends, the one trend that really is Chico, you're seeing, you know, sort of elderly housing stock, and I don't mean for people of age, but housing stock that's probably gone through one or two or three mortgages that are, you know, 40, 50-year-old housing stock that's getting rejuvenated. Really bright, you know, looks good, nice, you know, it helps the downtown, helps the infill, but then it's being priced out of the market, both on the rental side and the purchase side. And that's happening all across America, and I've challenged a lot of the inner city mayors who on one side talk about housing stock, but then on the other side they talk about, look how good our gentrification's going, look how much improvement we've had. And I saw that in St. Petersburg, Florida, saw that in San Antonio, where we lost net housing stock to the redevelopment of million-dollar condos. And unless you have an eye when you do your renovation and your rejuvenation of a community, unless you have an eye on figuring out the affordability while you're doing the other, you end up losing it. And then California has a unique phenomena that you just don't see anywhere else in the country, is the code, that state mandated codes as well as local codes in California are to a higher standard than almost anywhere I know of, other than maybe downtown Manhattan, downtown Philadelphia. There's a few places that have some special overlay districts because of, you know, the theory is fire. But these codes are so strict that building housing of any kind in California is, as a state, the most expensive state to build in. And that's not just local code, that's state code. And so, you know, at some point you got to say, how much have we gone too far in the codes to make housing stocks so expensive to build?
Yeah, it cuts both ways. But the most of the time, if you've got substandard housing that you're evicting people, many of those folks end up homeless. I've got a dozen stories from being proximate here in Chico, and it's just a bad situation. We are definitely down housing since I moved here in 2012. So it's almost like this rising flood. You know, you got a bucket and you're bailing it out. You've got one or two affordable housing units. Everyone cuts the ribbon, but maybe we lost 10 in the meantime.
Oh, yeah. This has to be just in the Chico, the one number that kept getting to me is we needed 650 units a year to keep even across the board, you know, on a natural bell curve of housing. Mm-hmm. And you need about 200 in the affordable level to keep up on the low-income affordable level. And, you know, nationally, this is a phenomenon. It's such a mega trend, and it's sad. And I go, and I know the numbers are all, you know, it's always hard to match apple to apple, but when Reagan went in, there was roughly 1.9 million gap in affordable housing nationwide. And because of the FEMA maps, for the just floodplains, because of the loss of mobile home parks all across America, but in particular the Southeast, and because of infill gentrification, our affordable housing market now and rental rates just simply going up. Depending on which study you follow, it ranges between 6 and 8 million as a gap now. And so the gap is tripled in about 25 years. And that's a